You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at FanRag Sports and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at FanRag Sports and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Our friends over at Locked On Cubs and Locked On Bears as well. If you're a big Chicago sports fan, go follow both of those teams as well. Our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. It's the line to hit us up. If you want to interact with us, we do Wednesday mailbag. That's exactly what we're going to do today. So all the voicemails for everybody that's dropped us a voicemail before or a text message with your reaction, thank you, and continue to do that. So you can do that and hop in the conversation at 331-979-1369. Well, Matt, it is official. Jabari Parker is a Chicago Bull, him being introduced today in front of the media and getting the first opportunity to really hear from him and how he feels about coming back to Chicago, and also hearing from the front office just briefly, as well as Fred Hoiberg, too, on the fit and what ultimately came down to the decision. I guess my first reaction is, what did you take away from this? Because if you're asking me, I didn't get a whole lot out of this.
Yeah, I didn't either, really. What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Hey, guess what? I'll say it one more time for all of you haters out there. I was wrong. It's official. Jabari Parker is a Chicago Bull. Enjoy yourselves. I still think it's dumb, but here we are. As far as the press conference itself, a couple of things that I was at least amused by or piqued my interest. Amused by was Joe Cowley of the Sun-Times, who we have discussed before on this podcast, pulling a Cowley gonna Cowley moment where everybody is just talking to Jabari about, oh, what are the wonderful emotions as far as having a homecoming, and you always dreamed about putting on a Bulls jersey, and what do you see as far as your NBA future here in Chicago? And Cowley said, this question is for Fred, with Jabari sitting at the same podium as Fred. What are you going to do about Jabari and Zach LaVine playing together and the fact that neither of them play any defense? And Fred had to try to put a positive spin on that question and turn it into, well, we're really excited about what Jabari can do with this team, this young core offensively, and I think he can play multiple positions. He can score from different parts of the floor. He can also guard a variety of positions, which if you have been listening to my opinion, you know I think that that's a bunch of BS. I think Parker is going to struggle mightily playing the three, and he certainly can't guard multiple positions, especially can't guard the three. So I thought that was interesting and good for Cowley for asking the question that's on every logical Bulls fan's mind, which is what the hell are they going to do defensively with LaVine and Jabari next to each other? And then the other one was Paxson defending the skeptics of this contract, saying, well, yeah, obviously the player or the team option is there. The contract is good for him. It's good for us. But as far as $20 million maybe being an overreach, and the fact that the fit isn't exactly perfect with the roster as far as where Parker should be playing and the assets the Bulls already have. Paxson said, "We looked at it as a great opportunity to add a talented young player, and that's what we looked at the most when making this decision." So basically, they were okay to maybe slightly overpay, and they were okay to look past the fact that on this roster right now, he doesn't seem to fit. Because Paxson is basically in that comment sticking to his gun saying they are right now in young talent accumulation mode, regardless of whether or not it fits the pieces they already have.
Man, I take away one thing from this, and you know, you can take it for what it is, and maybe it's similar to the press conference last year when they introduced Zach LaVine, and you know, the radio interviews he was doing too, I guess, didn't come across as how Bulls fans expected and wanted it to be. And I don't take a whole lot away from it, but a couple things that I had was, one, damn, Fred Hoiberg is going to have a really difficult job managing not only who's going to take the shots on this team, but trying to get guys to buy in other than just Chris Dunn and Wendell Carter Jr. to play defense. Like, I've told you off air, and shout out to the guys at 670 The Score, Bernstein and McKnight. Their post-press conference transition into interviewing Jabari Parker was basically, I didn't take anything away from that interview. And if I took one thing away, is he was honest about the fact that he knows he's not a great defender and that's not what he's in the NBA to do. And so they followed that up with an interview and asked him multiple times about the question marks he does have on defense and what he's going to do. And Parker's answer, I don't know if you can take it as a positive or negative. It was, if I had one word for it, it was very honest. And basically what he said was, you know, I'm not getting paid to play defense. I am getting paid to score. And that's what I think my biggest strength is in this league, is to be able to put the ball in the basket. And he brought up a couple points, like saying, you know, guys that come out and I score 20 or 30 points on them on a night that you talk about them being great defenders, what does that say about their defense? And he said, you know, to talk about weaknesses as far as defense goes, like, you're talking about a weakness that everybody in this league has. Like, nobody is a great defender. And that was his honest words about what he feels like he's going to do on this team. And the thing that I took from that is, like, damn, like, Chris Dunn and Wendell Carter Jr. are going to be asked to do a lot next season. And then I also thought about this too, is like, if Parker wants the legit opportunity to be the number one scorer on a team, I don't know how well that's going to go across with Zach LaVine and some other guys like Lauri Markkanen, who are going to be looking up to put up buckets as well. And it's going to be an odd situation for Fred Hoiberg to figure out in training camp and early on in next season.
Yeah, I definitely think that that's a pretty interesting response from Parker. And those people who were all aboard the Jabari train and really wanted the signing to happen and were willing to gloss over that defensive problematic area as far as his fit on this team, you basically just got it right from the horse's mouth right there. Like, saying, like, yeah, well, defense isn't really what I do, but I'm going to come to this team and bring this team buckets. And I mean, Hoiberg is excited for that, and I'm sure Paxson is excited for that too. And I think that's going to be Jabari's goal, because he knew before that second ACL tear in the 2016-17 season, his best season statistically, he was a 20 points per game scorer. And first and foremost, that's what he was. And I think that that's what he is going to try to get back to being. And that leads to all sorts of questions, kind of like you were talking about, as far as where these possessions get split up. And Chris Dunn coming into a contract year and wanting to prove that he has what it takes to be a valuable multi-year big contract guy running this offense. And Markkanen in year two. And LaVine getting his looks fresh off a new 20 per year contract. Like, Jabari's going to go out there and try to be a 20 points per game scorer, and I don't know how that's going to work. And as you said, when you were finishing up your thought, a lot of this is on Fred and making these pieces work together. And I can't wait to watch him try.
And it's a tall task to ask, too, of Chris Dunn, who's going to be the guy that you're going to ask to facilitate this offense. It's like, how do you manage not only trying to develop Lowry's shot and give him confidence? And ultimately, if I'm looking around this team, it's Lowry, it's Zach LaVine, and it's Jabari Parker. Those three guys I want getting buckets. But also, you could throw Wendell Carter Jr. in there too. Like, I would like to see him, as far as a player, like, we talked about it, he has balance on offense and defense. And I think some of the things that he talked about on draft night, and even when he was introduced, is like, I felt overshadowed at times, and I felt like people weren't able to see the full potential I have on the offensive side of the ball. And while if that doesn't translate right away, that might be good for the Bulls in an instance that, you know, you can give your majority of your buckets and your shots and your opportunities to LaVine, Parker, and Markkanen. Now that's talking about in a perfect world here. And so I think the major conflict, and we even heard like rumblings that there was conflict between who's going to be the alpha dog on this team as far as Dunn and LaVine go. And now you add Parker to this mix, and I don't think Parker necessarily feels like he's got to come and be the number one guy, but he's also playing too for the longevity of his career too. Like, it's not a mere fact that he signed a multi-year deal and he feels like he can develop his game and stay here for the long term. Like, he still has that option for next year. He could potentially be a free agent. So if things don't work out, he's going to be playing for himself as well. So I think all of this combining together to figure out exactly what you have on this Bulls roster could go two ways. Like, it could go really well and all of these guys find a way to play terrific together, or it could come crashing and burning and guys get frustrated because they're not getting their opportunity. And I thought that was another interesting point by Parker, Matt, and I want to get your reaction to it. Is he felt like he was at times in Milwaukee wasn't used right and wasn't given a fair chance to go out there and show what he can do. And I don't know if that comes from because they believed so much in Giannis and some of those other guys to score first on that team, if it was the headbutting and the weird things that went on with him and Jason Kidd. And look, I've said it multiple times, Jason Kidd, I feel like, victimized Jabari Parker at times there. And you can talk to Milwaukee Bucks fans and they'll say the same exact thing. So to me, he says multiple times in this interview and also on the radio that he just wants a fair chance at showing his ability. And I think that's all going to come on the offensive end. And he was honest about his defense. So what do you think about this dynamic of LaVine, Markkanen, Dunn, Carter, and now Parker all having to try to find a way to show their production on the offensive end? Like, there's only one ball at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think it's an exciting group of young players when you look at it on paper. And I've seen all sorts of people tweeting that out. A projected Bulls starting lineup, 18-19, and it's Dunn, LaVine, Parker, Markkanen, Carter. Cool. Bunch of high lottery pick guys and young guys. Everybody's 24 years of age or younger. And it's very exciting to look at that on paper. And then you think about what each of them brings to the table and what they are going to have to do to be an offensively efficient group. Because as exciting as it was to finally actually see the Bulls play hoyball for large stretches of last season after the year one with Rose and Butler, and then year two with Butler and Wade, we finally got to see some hoyball last year, and the parts of it that worked were really exciting and encouraging. But the Bulls, we have to remember, were still a very inefficient offensive team. They took a whole lot more threes than they did in Fred's first 2 years, but they were still a very inefficient offensive team. So basically, you have a similar roster coming back, but you're now adding to a Jabari Parker who, even in his 20 points per game year, where he played 51 games, was not a very efficient offensive player. And now, how do you make all these pieces work together? That is the big, giant, trillion-dollar question that's staring Fred Hoiberg in the face right now. And you and I have both expressed our various skepticisms about Fred and the job he's done and what he might be able to do as a quality NBA head coach that we haven't quite seen yet. Here it is, buddy. You got all these exciting pieces on paper. Can you make it work on a basketball court?
One thing before we go to break and then we take your questions for the remaining of the show, and we've got some great voicemails and some great text messages as well. You can hit us up at 331-979-1369. Text and voicemails there. Matt, the one thing that I will say positively about this, and I think is going to be something that Fred Hoiberg has to talk about with all five of these guys, is trying to find a specialized skill. And I'm talking about the three reliable scorers on this team. I looked at Zach LaVine's stats just from his first 3 or 4 years, and as well as Jabari Parker's too. At times, Parker, I felt like they were doing the whole thing with Denzel Valentine that we were doing here, is just sticking him in the corners and making him shoot threes and not giving him the ball and the opportunity to drive to the basket, create his own shot. You talk about that and maybe that being a strength of Parker's game. I also look at LaVine too. Like, the majority of his shots last year came off of four or more dribbles. So to me, LaVine is better at creating his own shot than he is at catching and shooting. So you're going to have to find a way outside of Markkanen, because Markkanen's a great catch and shoot player. Outside of him, though, you're going to have to find a way to either talk LaVine or Parker into becoming a more efficient catch-and-shoot player, or you're going to have to figure out at times how slowing the offense down, because if you've got two guys that play really well in isolation, you're talking about slowing the offense down. So maybe I'm looking to see if Zach LaVine can become a more efficient catch-and-shoot scorer. That would open up more things, I think, for Parker in isolation.
Jordan, you're talking about too many X's and O's in basketball logic here. You just got to be excited about Jabari because he was the number two overall pick, and he's from Chicago, and he won state titles at Simi, and that's all that matters.
I'm trying to give people...
Do you people understand how ridiculous you are when you say that? I was clearly saying that facetiously just so all y'all Jabari stands out there who think this is wise... Those are most of your reasons for thinking that it's a great move. Shut up about basketball analytics and logic. Jabari's great because Jabari's Jabari.
Let me finish my thought here.
Can we go? Go ahead and finish your thought. Then let's take a break.
I think ultimately it's going to come down to figuring out which guy is going to be able to do that more efficiently the next year. And if both of those guys want to have success and score, like we were talking, 18 to 20 points per game, one of those guys in training camp has to decide, all right, I'm going to work on this, or maybe even they're thinking about it now. I got to become a more efficient catch and shoot player, and the other guy is going to work his strength as far as isolation goes and driving to the basket. If you're asking me, I'd rather see Zach LaVine become the better catch and shoot scorer and be more consistent from the three, and then see Parker be able to work it in isolation. We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls, but when we come back, we're taking your questions. We're taking all of your voicemails. You can hit us up at 331-979-1369 or on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com as well, if you want to hit us up there. It's a great place to interact as well. We'll be right back here on Locked On Bulls. Stay right here with us. Back here on Locked On Bulls. Okay, I hope I didn't drown all the Bulls fans in too much X's and O's all at once. It's going to be a conversation we're going to have throughout training camp and going into the beginning of the season. All of valid points, too. And if you want to hit us up with your reaction, you want to interact with the show, hit us up at 331-979-1369. All right, Matt, let's kick it off with the first question.
All right, here. This first one comes from the 708. And it's really interesting to me. And I think some Bulls fans might find themselves in this Venn diagram of how you feel about certain players and certain decisions and moves that this team has made. So, food for thought here. Skeptical Bulls fan here with a little perspective. For Bulls fans unhappy about the Jabari Parker move, but at the same time would have been happy drafting Michael Porter Jr., they are very similar. Both defensively challenged, injury risk, high volume scorers that would be playing out of position based on how the roster is currently constructed. So how could you be okay with drafting Porter and not okay with signing Parker, who may or may not be a lower risk? I don't know, two ACLs versus back surgery. I'd say those are pretty equally high risk. So that's an interesting one that I hadn't really thought about. And to me, as far as if you're going to do a litmus test of how in stream and how in line you are with your opinions and takes on what the Bulls are doing, I check out because I wanted them to stay away from Porter Jr. and I thought Parker was a bad idea. If any of you out there really wanted the Bulls to take Michael Porter Jr. and didn't want them to sign Parker, you're being a bit of a hypocrite as far as how you see things. And you can say the same thing for those of you who didn't want to sign Michael Porter Jr. but are gung-ho about them adding Parker. Jordan, I thought this was an interesting point. What's your take on it?
Yeah, and I don't know if there's that many fans out there that wanted them to draft Michael Porter Jr. and at the same time stay away from Jabari Parker. Maybe there are some fans like that. I feel like it's more split the way you were talking about, that you were consistent as far as staying away from guys that have high volume scoring but injury risk in Porter and then staying away from Parker. Or there's people that wanted them to draft Michael Porter Jr. and stay away from Jabari or... and also sign Jabari Parker. Like, those camps, I think, are probably the two main parts of this fan base and what they feel. So when we were just talking about Zach LaVine and the Bulls spending money on Zach LaVine and then spending money and taking a chance on Jabari Parker, and all the points I brought it up because I liked the Zach LaVine signing, all the points that I made there about him being young, athletic, having the opportunity to still be a star, that's why I feel like I've got to have the same sort of sentiment towards Parker, and especially because it's on a short-term deal. So you could even put it in that perspective too. If you like the Zach LaVine deal, and then you want to stay completely far away from the Jabari Parker deal, it kind of contradicts what you're saying in both of those. And both points are valid. So I think it's a good point, though. Like, if you're in the camp that wanted Michael Porter Jr. in the draft, then you're probably in the same camp of that you wanted Jabari Parker to be signed. And then vice versa, the way you feel is you wanted to stay away from both players in general.
Yep. That's, you know, that's pretty much it. But if you are somebody who did have a intersection on your opinion on those two guys, maybe a bit eye-opening.
Definitely. This text message comes from the 847. It said, I'm torn between looking forward to Fred using the whole roster to be competitive and more of the same from last year. Early veteran play and letting young guys get more minutes. I want to see the young guys play, but there has to be a balance. I think that balance can get close to the 8th seed in the East. Love the podcast. Keep up the good work and insight, guys. So what do you think about this? Is like having this mixed feeling of hoping Fred can use this entire team to be competitive, but also at the same time, maybe you see Fred Hoiberg using Justin Holiday and Robin Lopez more minutes than you'd like to see them use him. What are your feelings on that, and what do you think we're going to ultimately see come October when we tip off?
My feelings on that are pretty simple. I think that the Bulls should be actively shopping Lopez and Holiday right now.
Absolutely.
I don't, like, you know, there's some talk about, oh, Rolo can mentor Wendell Carter Jr. for his rookie year, and that might be useful. I mean, honestly, you look at Wendell play in Summer League, and yes, it's only Summer League, but even still, people are talking about him being the most NBA-ready of all of the lottery bigs, and that's even though he like just turned 19 a few months ago, and he's the youngest of the bunch. I think that there's real truth to that. And, you know, yes, role models and older veteran mentors are great, but are they entirely necessary? And does that also mean that we need Robin Lopez taking minutes when Wendell looks like he's ready to play at the NBA level and should be thrown in there right away? Throw him in the deep end, in my opinion. Justin Holiday, look, he was a weird signing that came on the cheap in the 2-year deal for the, you know, transitionary period of a rebuild. But you got Denzel, you got Chandler Hutchison, you got LaVine. You got Jabari now, who they're convinced can be playing minutes at the three, playing most of his minutes at the three when you look at the backlog at the four. Holiday just doesn't fit anywhere right now. Neither of them can get you a first-round pick. Both of them might get you a second-round pick. Who knows? All I know is that Robin Lopez and Holiday, for all they did as veterans on this team last year in year one of the rebuild, they got to move. Like, there's no point in them being on this team this year.
I'm with you more so on Robin Lopez is more immediate. Like you said, I think out of all the bigs that were taken in the draft so far, Wendell Carter Jr. is probably the one that least needs a NBA role model or a veteran to kind of welcome him into the league. That's just how I feel on the outside, like just listening to him, listening to his press conferences, the people that talk about Wendell Carter Jr., and then just seeing his game in the summer league. And like I said, I don't take too much away from that, but if you're just taking it in a vacuum, I think he's the least of the bigs as far as draft picks go that need sort of that NBA mentor in his first year. And it's kind of funny. It's like, do you keep Robin Lopez, use all the positives from what comes of him being on the roster still, and are you committed to only playing him 10 or 15 minutes a night, or do you move him and give all the minutes to Wendell Carter Jr.? Like, I'm in the camp that I'd rather just see Carter be thrown out there too and play. And like a lot of other rebuilding teams would tell us that sometimes that doesn't work, but I feel like I'm pretty confident in saying that Carter could figure it out early, and he's got some players around him who've been in the league already while young, still experienced in the first couple seasons. So I think he'd be able to figure things out. So I'm more pressed at, I'd rather just see Robin Lopez moved because I want to see Wendell Carter Jr. playing as many minutes as possible. I don't think you get any value for Robin Lopez now. I think it's unless somebody gets hurt and that's what you're committed to and waiting to the trade deadline, I don't see any team that needs a big right now. Like the Bucks that we talked last season, they just signed his brother in Brook Lopez and Ersan Ilyasova. The Washington Wizards got Dwight Howard. They were the ones that were looking for a center. The only other team that I could think of, and you're not going to get anything back, but the only other team that I could think of that's trying to go all in right now, and it's the team that just traded for Kawhi, would be the Toronto Raptors. And they've got Valanciunas off the bench, but maybe they're looking for a backup big, but you're looking at pennies on the dollar now for the value of Robin Lopez. Unless somebody gets hurt during the season and that's their plan moving forward. But if it's me, I loved Robin Lopez as a Bull, but it's time to say farewell, and I'd rather look at Wendell Carter Jr. getting the most of the minutes.
Yeah, and then just to quickly touch on the back end of that that texter's comments about the Bulls maybe being an eighth seed, I still don't see it. I know people talk about how weak the Eastern Conference is, but you look at some of the other teams that are still projected to be playoff teams in the East, I just don't see the Bulls being one of the best eight teams in the conference, unless we all of a sudden see this amazing perfect gel and harmony between these guys that we're talking about getting to play together, especially the starting five, and they all outperform what they did last year significantly, because this was a team that won 27 games and 7 of those were like a weird hot streak where Nico looked like one of the best players in the league. So nah, I don't see that. I think the Bulls are lottery bound again, and I think that's what they should be.
Last question before we take another break here, and then we'll get to some voicemails as well on the backside of the break. This one comes to the 701, and this was pre-Jabari Parker signing as well. This actually came on the night before. Jabari would be a great signing. Absolutely no way the Bulls get a better free agent in 2019 anyway. If the contract is front-loaded, might as well take a flyer on him. He's a good kid and works hard. The only two things that I would just grab from this really quick is, obviously we know it's a $20 million contract here 1 year with a team option in the second. I'm with you too, man. Like, as far as the skeptics go, as far as who they could drive in as a superstar, and you know the narrative going on now is as far as players using this as a chance to team up together, the Bulls don't have a guy that's working the phones and trying to backlog and bring a star in here, so that makes it even more difficult to lure in a star at 2019 or 2020. Look, nobody's taking away anything that Jabari Parker's done as far as him being a good kid and being a guy that works hard. He said it in his press conference today that he wants to do exactly what he did in Milwaukee with the youth and working with the schools in the city to be a mentor to some of these young guys. And there's a really good video of Jabari Parker when he first came into the league on Sports Illustrated back in 2014-2015. The video was made. It's fantastic. I'll tweet out the link later, but that's a fantastic look into who Jabari Parker is as a person and what he's done for the community. So it's nothing about that. It's all about basketball. It's all about X's and O's. And I think he, like, personality wise, he's a great fit. And he's like, what's better than bringing a guy from Chicago? And I know that narrative's a ton, but what's better than bringing a guy that's a good guy that's going to help in the community too? Let's hope it just translates to the basketball court as well.
Yeah, and dude, I'm with you there. And I said that on Monday when we talked about this finally happening. I love Jabari. Everything about him is a high character kid, and he does wonders for the youth of Chicago and Milwaukee and all of that, and all the credits to the world. I just don't think that should be relevant when you're figuring out what players best fit your basketball team. I really don't. I don't think that factors in. And yes, that is the positive spin to say it is a low risk situation because you're spending $20 million this year, and what else are you going to spend that money on is the common theme, common question that people ask the doubters, and the skepticism about actually landing a bigger name than Jabari in 2019. So you're not wrong in your logic as far as defending it as a good move. That is the logic to say why this is a low risk move, because they have that team option. Fine. Yes, you're right. That doesn't necessarily mean it's still a good signing. It just means that if they didn't put that team option in there, they would be monumentally stupid, especially paying him $20 million both of those seasons.
You're not wrong there. We got to take another short break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, we're running through more of your text messages, your voicemails as well. 331-979-1369 is the line to hit us up. Be back in 60 seconds. Stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls.
Jordan Malley and Matt Peck back here, Locked On Bulls, a mailbag Wednesday, and let's kick off our third segment with a voicemail. This one comes to us from our guy, DVS.
Jordan, Matt, going on? This is DVS. Look, I had to call in because I knew you guys were just going to be ecstatic after the weekend news and saw that we did indeed pick up Jabari Parker, who I had heard you guys just advocating and salivating at the mouth to pick up. So I was trying to sit down and figure out the lineup that Hoiberg's going to run out, and I've come to the conclusion that Jabari Parker is the point guard of the future, man. We're going to run Jabari Parker at the one. We're going to put Cristiano Felicio at the five. Carter's going to start the four. We're going to move Markkanen over to the three. And I guess we have to play LaVine at the two. But you never know, man. They may trade for another power forward. All five starting power forward team, that's the wave of the future, man. And I can't wait to see how much of a fun season we're going to have. So, yay, Parker. Peace.
Perhaps a bit of a sarcastic take on the Parker signing, and I, as always, appreciate the sense of humor, DVS. Let's just try out an entire power forward lineup, right? DVS clearly has the same skepticism I have as far as what position Parker is supposed to be playing on an NBA team, specifically a modern NBA team. He is best suited right now to be a small ball four. Like, that's the position he should play. And now you add him to Markkanen and Portis, and your immediately fresh-faced 19-year-old number 7 overall pick, Wendell Carter Jr., who is projected to play some center but can also obviously play some four and stretch the four from that spot as well. And I guess the one thing he missed out on is sarcastically saying, hey, Jabari's the point guard of the future. What about Chris Dunn? Does DVS not believe in Chris Dunn as the future point guard of the Chicago Bulls? I don't know, Jordan, what's your take on
this? It's pretty funny, and for all the texters too, we've gotten a bunch of text messages as well as like, Jordan, can you check on the pulse of Matt after this weekend? And so those are pretty funny, so we appreciate all of the takes.
Still standing, y'all. Still standing.
As far as Chris Dunn goes, man, I don't know if I'm in like a camp by myself or if there are fans out there that feel like Chris Dunn could be a solid point guard on a team like... At this point, with Carter, with Markkanen, with LaVine, and with Parker, I don't necessarily need Chris Dunn to be an all-star, to be a top five point guard in this league. I don't need that from him. What I need from him is to be a guy that's going to be able to facilitate and find a way to get all of these guys buckets, find the best places to get them open and their best shots. Like, that's ultimately what I need from Chris Dunn. And if Chris Dunn can be one of the best defenders on this team, which he was last year, let's not take that away from Chris Dunn last year either, is outside of Robin Lopez, it was Chris Dunn 1, Robin Lopez 2 as far as your best defenders on this Bulls team. So you look at those two guys, if you can be a great defender here, and there's going to be question marks too about Chris Dunn as far as, is he going to be playing for his contract? As Ricky brought up on our episode yesterday, is like, he's got early extension talks that are coming up this year, and is he going to be looking to have to be more of an offensive player if he wants to get paid? Is that really on his mind, or is he more committed to this core and staying here in Chicago in long term, and that's just kind of out of sight, out of mind? All good, valid questions, but I feel like I'm kind of in a camp by myself as far as what I think Chris Dunn can still be, because I just go back to the winning streak and how good he played and his confidence being built up and how well he played during December and January before he had some weird injuries that ultimately kind of derailed the season.
Yeah, and I mean, if our listeners remember my take when we were talking about this in a pretty heated episode, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, as far as who the Bulls front office and coaching staff viewed to be the prize of that Butler trade when it happened. Obviously, fast forwarding, we all agree right now, I think at least most of us, that Markkanen was the pleasant surprise and the prize of that. But I was kind of talking about how I thought, given how much the Bulls showed interest in Dunn at Providence coming into the 2016 draft, nearly trading Butler to get him in the 2016 draft to two different teams, talking with Boston, talking with Minnie, they wanted Chris Dunn so much. I was talking about how Dunn was actually the piece the Bulls were really after, despite everyone saying at the time, oh, LaVine's the big piece of that trade, just because Dunn had kind of a down rookie year that was below expectations, and LaVine proved himself to be, before that ACL tear, a 20 points per game scorer. So I've always held that opinion that of that trio, when the trade went down, the Bulls really saw Dunn as the guy they really wanted. And outside of Markkanen being the first guy I feel great about in that trade, I would put Dunn over LaVine right now. And that's how I felt for a while. That's how I still feel.
Yeah, and I think everything can change too in an instance. And like we had talked about before, as much as we talk about the potential future with all five of these guys on this roster, your young core, and even like you could throw in maybe a young core of seven of Portis and Valentine too, depending on what kind of Bulls fan you are. I look at that and still say the only piece that I feel like the Bulls say that is completely off the board, never trading, not getting rid of, is Lauri Markkanen. Everybody else still has, you know, the potential to work up their value as far as players go, because should a superstar come available from another team, I think the Bulls are going to be in play for that, and they've said that for a long time. So if you're looking at free agency too, and the spin on Chris Dunn as well, is like, if Chris Dunn, the best part for the Bulls would be, I know like some people are talking about if he plays well, the Bulls might have to overpay him. Like he could also add value as far on the trade market too. So, and it depends on how well, how big the Bulls are on Chris Dunn. I still think they believe highly in his game and the way he's going to be able to run an offense and play defense and play hard. He fits the mold of what a Bulls player is. So I'd be surprised if they were looking to move him. But if a package for a superstar comes up, I don't see how you can't include guys like Parker and LaVine and Dunn and even Wendell Carter. If there was an opportunity to go out and get a top five player right now, I think all those players would be in talks as far as a package goes.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong about that.
Let's get to some more questions, just some more reactions as well from Bulls fans, just how they feel about this move overall. This one comes from the 770. It said, "Hey guys, I was actually going to send in a text asking about the Jabari Parker rumors from a few days ago, but by the time I thought about it, what to say, these guys went and got him already. My initial reaction was very negative. Concerns about the fit, his health, how much the Bulls were going to give him, among many others, really put me off at first. I know neither of you were big on the idea of Parker coming to Chicago, and Matt definitely wasn't a huge fan of the signing. I'm sure, but by the way I see it, he doesn't fit and just hurts this team. That'll give us a better chance at a better pick next season. And if it happens, at least we have the team option." He said, "I've come around to the idea of Parker a little bit out of curiosity of what he might become. But worst case scenario, we'll only have him for a year and we can all move on." So I think there's two things from that. Whether or not you believe as a Bulls fan the Bulls will be back in the lottery next season, and worst case scenario and best case scenario as far as this Parker fit. Matt, what do you think about both of those?
Okay, so I understand where this texter is coming from and is obviously someone who started out pessimistic about this Parker signing and is trying to talk themselves into being okay with it. And that's certainly something I can sympathize with right now and empathize with. My one hang up here is where you use the logic that, okay, well, if Parker doesn't fit and he ends up hurting this team, then silver lining is it gives the Bulls a better chance of getting back into the lottery and securing themselves another high lottery pick in the 2019 draft. That's where I call BS. Because why are you hedging your bet in that way? If the Bulls want to be back in the lottery, then why sign a guy for $20 million who this team believes is going to help them add W's to the win-loss column? And instead of putting him there, take the kid you just drafted, a 22nd overall pick, Chandler Hutchison, and see if he can earn himself a spot in the starting lineup playing the wing. Because you talk about your need for a 3-and-D wing, that's not what Parker is. So maybe Chandler Hutchison isn't great in his rookie NBA season, even though he's an older four-year college player. Maybe he is not the same offensive talent that Parker is. We can probably safely say that that's absolutely true right now, that he's not the offensive talent Parker is. So if you just go with the rookie you picked and continue working on the young core that you have, and it still leads to a team that winds up in the lottery, you could do that without adding Jabari. So that's the part of the logic that I don't like.
Yeah, I think the Jabari Parker signing says everything you need to know about what the Bulls are trying to do here. Repeated it multiple times. I've said Paxton has said they never want to have a season like they did last year.
We did this year what we felt was in the long-term best interest of the Bulls. It's not a situation that any of us want to ever be in again. It goes against everything as a competitive person that you believe in. But it's the way the system's set up.
They're not interested in being in the lottery long term like some of these other teams that are rebuilding, the way that their blueprint goes. And this is not what the Bulls are interested in doing. And so to me, this is not a move which says, you know what, we're just going to take a chance on his young talent. If he gets hurt or something again, we'll be back in the lottery. We're not 100% confident. if they weren't 100% confident, they would have thrown $120 million at Parker and LaVine. So to me, it says that the Bulls are going to try to take another step from the 27 wins that they had last season. And like I said, I think it's probably going to be end up a 36 to 40 win team, lowest end to the highest end. And that's if everybody stays healthy. That's where the Bulls ultimately want to be. They want to hang around the opportunity of having a chance at that eighth seed. And I know Bulls fans out there hate hearing that and hearing that the rebuild is kind of over, but think about it, 27 games with that roster last year and in a weak East now. Like 35 to 40 wins is not out of the question for this young core. If somehow three out of the five core players have great seasons, 35 to 40 wins is not out of the question. But it all comes down to health, too. You got two guys that are coming back from ACL injuries. You've got Chris Dunn, who missed time a bunch last year on and off. So you need everybody to stay healthy in order for them to take that next step. But I just think there's no way that this team's back in the top 10 of the lottery. That would have to be total destruction on their part as far as guys getting hurt, things not panning out. And it would just have to be a total meltdown of a season for them to be back in the top 10.
Yep. Along those lines, as we're talking rebuild and whether the Bulls are going to be a winning or losing team next year, here's our next text that comes to us from the 815. When you guys talk about the rebuild, it sounds like you or maybe even some fans want to be tanking and in the lottery or going for a championship. I don't feel that this is the right way to look at it. When you're a rebuilding team, it's a progressive process. You can't go from 0 to 100 over 1 year. There are some exceptions, like when LeBron switches teams, but that's not practical. If you're building through the draft, you slowly climb up the ranks. The team starts gelling. I find continuity to be super underrated in the NBA. Everybody just wants to team up, super teams, yada, yada, yada. Okay, so this texter is saying, it seems like you and or I and a portion of Bulls fandom wants tank or championship contention, and that this texter has something wrong with that or has a problem with that. Well, I've got news for you, texter. That's kind of unfortunately how the NBA works right now. There are four, maybe you could say six teams coming into 2018-19 season that are saying to themselves, we think we have what it takes to contend for a championship. In Golden State's case, defend our title. In four, maybe five other teams' cases, actually go blow to blow with Golden State and knock them off. The other 25 or so teams are trying to rebuild on the fly or tank their way to a franchising player. That's how this is working. And personally, I mean, you look at draft history, and Jordan and I, we've talked about this before. It's hard to hit on big franchise-changing players when you're drafting in the teens and the 20s. The Sixers trust the process. Look at their core. Simmons, Embiid, Fultz. That came from several years of tanking and several years of top lottery picks, and you don't even always hit on all of your lottery picks. So to me, that's why it makes more sense for the Bulls to be a lottery team and a tanking team again in year two. Rebuilding for 1 year and then trying to compete by adding a two ACL tear Jabari Parker is not as logical to me as saying, okay, let's give all the minutes in the world to our rookies and our second-year players, see if we can get more development from them and from Fred Hoiberg in his system, and add another high lottery pick next year. To me, that's just the way the NBA works right now. And being stuck in the middle is where the Bulls were when they had Butler, and that's why they traded him.
Here's a little bit of a reality check. What I want, what you want, and what Bulls fans want is not exactly what the Bulls front office or their ownership wants.
Ownership wants ticket sales. Ownership wants money. That's all they want. Fans want championships. The Bulls front office wants to make ownership happy. Ownership wants money. That's all. This is what it all boils down to.
And look, we're not discrediting anybody, any Bulls fan out there. That we have a lot. There's way more competent Bulls fans out there than there are non-competent Bulls fans, and they understand the fact that, you know, the two signings this summer, bringing LaVine back at $78 million over 4 years, and taking this shot on Jabari Parker for $40 million with a team option. That screams, we're done. We're done in the lottery. We're done doing this tanking thing. That's not the blueprint we're going for. If the blueprint was to go and try to do exactly what you were saying, Matt, is get a high lottery pick next summer, The move would have been taking that cap space and going and trading in for a salary dump and acquiring other draft picks. That's what that move would have said. They would have already shipped Robin Lopez off. They would have already gotten rid of Justin Holiday. They would have made this team as bad as possible. They look at last season and they tried to do that and they kind of half-assed it at times, playing Nico Mirotic. But adding, I go back to this summer, adding Jabari Parker and Zach LaVine with the amount of money that they did that at, that was a statement. That's a, we're done doing this. We think that the core that we have in place right now over the next 2 years is good enough to get us to where we want to be, ultimately in the driver's position to acquire a superstar to take us to the next level, to the top four. And I don't know if the front office feels like they're okay with a young core being sort of mediocre as far as battling for an eighth seed in the East, but 27 wins last year. Think about the team that they were running out there last year. And I get it. They had a lot of wins at the end of the season where teams were tanking as well. But still, 27 wins, and Nico Mirotic, had he not been traded, I feel like there would have been more wins on this Bulls team. So you added Parker, who's a scorer, a 20-point scorer, which I think for the most part, when Nico's time that he came back, it was really good. That's what you're getting from Parker if he stays healthy and if he ends up being a scorer that can put up 18 to 20 a night. So to me, you're looking at a team, I hate to say it to Bulls fans, but if everybody stays healthy and things start to work a little bit, you're probably looking at a 35 to 38 win team, or maybe on the higher side, a 40 win team, and that's right there. Like, Washington got in with 43 wins last year. So you're looking at an Eastern Conference, even with Kawhi coming into the Raptors, a wide open Eastern Conference. So I don't know, man. Like, I'm just trying to give the harsh reality that this team is kind of done rebuilding. Like, as far as getting into the lottery and getting a high lottery draft pick and doing all that, they're done doing that. And they've said it multiple times.
I was going to say, we've heard that from Paxson. He said, this is not a fun season. It's not a season we want to experience again. I mean, it's not hard to read between the lines on that one. They had one season where their plan was to be a lottery team and ideally a high lottery team. They kind of screwed that up. But even though they kind of screwed that up, it is full steam ahead and they don't want to be a tanking team anymore.
All right, I want to run through some more of these questions before we finish up here. This question comes from, it's not really a question, more of a statement from the 630. It says, for the Locked On Bulls podcast, after yesterday's podcast when you shared 74% of Bulls fans liked the move for Jabari, it confirmed my concerns the Bulls fans actually basketball knowledge is actually lacking. This was after I saw a recent video on a Bulls social media fan page of Jabari shooting jumpers with Ray Allen. Besides the fact that shooting against no defense means nothing, I simply commented on three things. First, the fit of Zach and Lowry. Second, his move more naturally to the power forward versus the small forward. And his size and dropping from 260 to 230 to be able to play the wing. He said, I got destroyed on all three comments by dozens of people on the page. Is Bulls fans love just blinded by Jabari's Chicago roots? Is their basketball knowledge that bad here? Or am I just the latest victim of social media trolling? Possibly a combination of all three of those? Let me know, guys. Matt, I'll let you touch on this one first. This is actually kind of funny.
This is a dangerous question slash theory, because I don't want to get myself or yourself in trouble, Jordan, by insulting the intelligence of our loyal listeners. I do think that there is certainly a wide range of basketball knowledge and NBA knowledge among Bulls fans, because it is such an expansive fan base. And look, I don't necessarily disrespect Bulls fans who might not know as much as you or I about basketball analytics and X's and O's and player stats and who fits where on the court and what kind of plays Fred Hoiberg's trying to run and all that kind of stuff. If you just love the Bulls because you like basketball as a sport, even though you might not understand the intricacies of it, and you just have fallen in love with the Bulls at some point in your life and are just still so deeply in love, I respect that. And I am fine with that. There are some who, and the Jabari signing is the most recent example of a fan base being not entirely in lockstep with whether or not they think it's a good idea. I think the fans that are more casually, I love the Bulls because I'm a Chicago person and I've always loved the Bulls, and that's just who I am, and I enjoy watching basketball. They were tending to be the people excited about Jabari because they knew the name. They knew he was a high lottery pick just a few years ago, has shown some promise at the NBA level, but most of all is a guy that they can get excited about because he's a Chicago guy and people see star potential in him. Myself and those of our listeners who might be more nerdy in how much basketball they watch, how much basketball information they consume, I believe, are the ones expressing skepticism about the signing because from a basketball X's and O's standpoint, he doesn't really fit what they have right now. So that's basically as concretely as I can break that down without trying to insult anybody and insult anybody's intelligence or their fandom, because I can never tell anybody else how to be a fan of a team that they love. But to me, I think that's where we are with this Parker example. Some fans know more than others. And those who are questioning the Parker signing, in my opinion, are ones who pay a little bit more attention to the analytics of basketball.
I will never insult our fan base because I think the majority of the people that have been here, especially since day one and even before we did Locked On Bulls, the Debatables before that, going on almost 2 years of doing a show together, we wouldn't insult our listeners' intelligence. They know what's going on. And I would be willing to say like about 95% of our listeners know what's going on and agree with most of the things that we're saying. Obviously, it's split down the middle, like I've said before.
Oh, I wouldn't say 95% of our listeners agree with us all the time. I wouldn't say that
at all. I would say the 95% of them, though, are competent Bulls fans and, for the most part, have opinions that we agree with. And obviously, we're not going to agree on everything. You and I don't agree on everything. But I think there is. Having such a major fan base and such a massive fan base, and look, I think the 3 years, and maybe you could even extend that to 4 or 5, the kind of bitterness that I think as a Bulls fan we had of being such a competitive and great team, and then the tragedy that happened with Derrick Rose, and like all of that is part of being a fan, wears on you. And when you don't have the success that you were looking for, you have it and then it's taken away from you, and then all the weird things that happened with Butler and two, and the weird terrible moves by the front office, wears on Bulls fans. And so I feel like as Bulls Nation, majority of this fan base is skeptical of what the Bulls are trying to put together here. And it's become kind of a cynical fan base in that way. And I feel like winning solves all of that, like especially in the fan base's perspective. If the Bulls start to win and these young players turn out to be good, you're going to see some of that wipe away, like especially if it's consistent over 2, 3, 4, 5 years. But there's got to be a plan in place for me as a fan. Like I like transparency. And when people are honest and they follow through with the things that they say, that to me speaks more volumes than maybe what the Bulls have done over the last 3 or 4 years. And there's people that are going to ride or die with the fan base. And I agree with you in that factor, Matt, too, is that I'm not never going to tell somebody how to be a fan. We're just simply giving you all the options on everything that we talk about in opinions, in our own personal opinions. Whether you agree or disagree, I think makes for great debate. And that's ultimately what you're here to listen for an hour a day, is to listen to us banter back and forth about every possible scenario that goes on with this team. And you're not going to like everything that I say or fans say out there, too. But I wouldn't insult as far as people that pay attention to this team and this is their favorite team and ride or dies, and also listen to the show. I wouldn't insult their intelligence as a whole, because I feel like 90-95% of our fan base is pretty intelligent about what they say, and that might not always come across as far as texters and voicemails and tweets go, but that's just a small minority part of the fan base as a whole.
All right, let's wrap up with this one because we're getting close to the hour mark here. We've talked our faces off about Jabari Parker today and the day before that and the day before that. So let's finish up with this one from the 224. I assume you guys will be discussing Jabari for most of the episode. Here's a non-Jabari question for you. Thank you, Texter. With Uncle Drew having been released last week, what is your favorite sports movie and why? Also, did you see Uncle Drew? What did you think of it? I can answer the second half of that question quickly. No, haven't seen Uncle Drew. Don't plan to. Looks really dumb.
You're lame.
What about you, Jordan?
You're so lame. You are so old and
what,
lame.
What, for not wanting to see Uncle Drew?
You're so old and you're so lame. I'm going
they
to go see
it. They
took
a Sprite commercial and turned, or Pepsi or whatever, and turned it into a feature-length film? No, no thanks. Hard pass.
You're asking me if I want to see NBA guys that at times on TV are pretty funny, like good charisma and a good writing? Like, sure, if it's going to entertain me for 90 minutes, I'm going to see it. Like the mere fact alone that Shaq's in it and he's pretty hilarious, like I'll go see it. Like I'm entertained. I haven't seen a movie in a long time at the movie theaters, so maybe I'll wait till this actually comes out.
Meaning, isn't it out already?
No, it's still in. I thought it was still in theater. No, it's definitely still in theaters.
Oh, so you mean like out on like DVD and on demand?
Yeah, like if it comes out on Netflix or some streaming service, I'll watch it.
Yeah, so you're not trying to go pay, you know, whatever it costs, $15 plus a soda and a snack to see it in theaters? Because I might get around to watching it on the comfort of my own couch at some point in the next, I don't know, however long I'm alive. But I'm not going to go pay money to see it in theaters. That's not a movie you need to see in theaters.
I'm just not a big movie theater guy. So I probably haven't seen a movie in the theaters in like 2 or 3 years, to be honest with you. And I can't even remember the last movie that I've seen. So I want to see Uncle Drew. It looks entertaining. It looks funny. And you might be entertained by the older crowd who might think that this is just a cheap knockoff and they turned it into a commercial, but I like it. I think it's going to be entertaining, but no, I haven't seen it. It is on my list to see though. As far as favorite movie in general, as far as all time, there's so many good sports movies, man. Like
there's a lot of good ones, man.
You know, a lot of people hated Moneyball. I just love the story behind Moneyball, and I thought
Moneyball's a good movie. I wouldn't put it like not even my top 10 probably, but it's a good sports movie.
That one comes off the top of my head. The one about the Glory Road, the one that Disney did, I think even though it had a Disney mm-hmm. spin to it, that's a phenomenal story. And I'm a sucker for a good documentary too. So like I would even include documentaries as far as sports go, as far as sports movies go too, because I think
no, you can't include documentaries.
No? Why not?
No, that's its own genre. That's its own genre. Because like if you could include that, then so many 30 for 30s would be like just knocking out all of my regular favorite sports movies in the top 10, because 30 for 30 documentaries are so freaking good.
Okay, I could see how you could argue that.
You got to make them your own category.
I could see how you could argue that. Man, there are so many good movies. Like remember the Titans and...
Dude, I was going to say Titans, I don't know if it's my number one overall, but it's always the one that comes to my mind first. Not only is it a great high school football movie, but I was a huge... was and am a huge nerd as far as like the civil rights part of American history as a history student who took a lot of history classes in college, and I actually had a focus in the civil rights part of our American history. So kind of blending that into a sports story was always just such an amazing movie to me, with some really solid performances from a lot of great actors across the board there. Denzel, the name's escaping me, but the guy who plays Avon Barksdale in The Wire,
oh, right.
Who plays Julius in that movie, he's fantastic. Yeah, that movie's just so, so good. And like always uplifting, right? It doesn't matter how many times you watch Remember the Titans, even though it has kind of a little bit of a sad ending, it's like it still makes you feel good and hopeful about life and about sports.
It's crazy because I'm naming like another Disney. This will be the third Disney-related sports movie, but Miracle was a phenomenal movie. Can't tell you how many times I think my dad has watched that movie, but that's a phenomenal one. There's some classics too, Hoosiers, but you could also go...
I was going to say, we haven't named a basketball one yet.
Besides
Hoosiers
Glory
is
Road.
The one that everybody goes to first. Okay, real quick, just one word answer. Hoosiers. Overrated, underrated, rated. Appropriately rated, I should say.
Equally appropriately rated.
Yeah, I agree.
And then like some honorable mentions too. Like you could talk about cheap comedies. Great movie was Talladega Nights, and you could toss that in as a sports movie.
Fantastic, dude. Speaking of Will Ferrell, Semi Pro. I love that movie.
It was all
absolutely
right.
Absolutely love that movie.
It was all right for me. Thinking of others too, like I don't know if you consider this a sports movie or not, and definitely should be considered a sports movie, but Happy Gilmore is like an all-time favorite for me.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's up there.
You could even throw cheesy movies like The Benchwarmers in there too. I don't know if you've ever seen that one.
Replacements with Keanu Reeves.
Oh man, yeah. See, like we could go on.
That was so stupidly bad.
We can go on forever.
Ooh, here's another one. Sixth Man. You ever see that one? With I can't remember. Was it Damon Wayans or Marlon Wayans? I think it was Marlon Wayans.
Never seen it.
One of the Wayans brothers were like, it's like he and his brother are basketball players on the same college team. And like one of them dies, but then he comes back and is sort of like a Casper the Friendly Ghost version of a basketball player. It's like Air Bud, but instead of a dog, it's the ghost of this guy's brother who they use as like a cheating, literally sixth man on their basketball team. So they'll like throw alley-oops to a ghost. And he's a ghost, so he can make a shot from wherever he wants to on the court. Oh my God, it's a great one. If you haven't seen it, you got to check it out. Jordan, everyone listening, Sixth Man, great basketball movie.
There's so many that we're missing too. So I know we're going to probably get grilled for not naming the ones, but I think another one too that I think about, and you could talk about TV series too as well as a movie is Friday Night Lights is one. Like, the movie and also the TV series was really great. There's so many other ones too out there.
I prefer the TV series to the movie. No disrespect to Billy Bob, but the TV series was just so good.
Hi, LLB, Mr. Malley, Mr. Peck. Just reaching out today. Listened to you guys' podcast yesterday, going over about the Bulls' direction. I think it's the same direction they've always been going through, the business direction. It's not Paxson, it's not Gar, it's Jerry. Mr. Reinsdorf. He's the owner of two rebuilding teams, the White Sox and the Bulls. He can't really have two teams rebuilding at the same time. That's why I think he misses out on that playoff money that he makes every year when the Bulls are in the playoffs. I also think another business move that they made, I found it interesting how Jabari Parker plays the 3 and the 4, which happens to be the same position of two guys who are coming up to the last year of their rookie deals, and Denzel Valentine and Bobby Portis. I'm thinking maybe the Bulls are having that log jam there, so it's harder for Bobby and Denzel to get the type of exposure this year and make more money for the next upcoming season after that. So I think that's really what they're going for with that. Also, guys, really appreciate the show. I'm glad you guys for what you guys are doing.
Very interesting point. I want to carry this conversation over to tomorrow's episode, but he brings up a lot of interesting points. Do you see this Bulls team as more of a business style model as far as what they're doing here, bringing up the points about two rebuilding teams, just ownership in general, and whether or not this Parker play was to maybe lower the production of Bobby Portis and Denzel Valentine? That's pretty cynical. If that's the thought and the process for those guys, I don't know about that, about all of that, and I want to get into more of that tomorrow, but I wanted you guys to simmer on this question and this thought, because a very good voicemail. But overall, like, all those things played in that voicemail, Matt, what do you think of that?
Interesting theory. I agree with you. I think it's not quite that cynical, the levels and modes at which the front office is operating right now, trying to think 8 steps ahead as far as what they're going to do with those contracts, namely Bobby, because he's the one that they really like. And Bobby, for his own right, he's talking about being a 6th man this year. And with Jabari now sliding into the 3, it doesn't necessarily take away from Bobby's minutes if they only plan on playing Parker at the 3, but that's not necessarily the case. But yeah, I mean, that's a whole big, gigantically different conversation that we can get into later. One other quick point, Jordan. This happened while we were recording. Casey Johnson of the Trib, friend of the pod, reporting that the deal is not yet official, but the Bulls plan to sign Antonio Blakeney to a minimum deal Thursday.
Bang! What did I tell you? So I've been advocating boy Antonio Blakeney.
You have performed well again in summer league, and we can get more into that on tomorrow's show as well. So there it is. No official figures yet, other than the plans to be the minimum deal, but the once two-way player, Antonio Blakeney, looks like he has earned himself a full NBA contract with the Chicago Bulls. Casey Johnson reporting that on Wednesday around noon. So we could talk about that tomorrow as well.
Toronto needs a shooting guard. Justin Holiday? Maybe? Possibly? Making room for it? I don't know. We'll find out. We can discuss more on tomorrow's show.
All right.
That's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can join the conversation as far as mailbag every single Wednesday goes. 331-979-1369. If you want to drop us a voicemail, a question, anything you have as far as what you're thinking about this Bulls team going forward, some of the moves that they've made this summer, what it means as far as where they are in this rebuild. Are they done rebuilding? Do you feel like that? Is that the best move for this Bulls team moving forward? What do you think about Jabari Parker, Zach LaVine signing? Anything you want to drop for us, hit us up. Text messages and voicemails, 331-979-1369. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. I'm Metal Thumb Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern at 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Hit us up on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls on Twitter. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShibles, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Thank you again, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.